The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
Coming up on today's show, we're going to see what happens, the pickle we can get ourselves in when we do a real estate transaction with a family member.
We're also going to answer questions from a caller about whether you should make deposits into a Roth IRA or a 529 college savings plan. And it's a dilemma that many go through.
And got to talk to somebody who's well set for retirement, but still, should you pay off the mortgage or not pay off the mortgage?
And that's the age-old question. One of the biggest questions we receive is, should I have a mortgage in retirement? Should I not have a mortgage in retirement? You'll hear what's best for you.
That and more. Stick around.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Yeah, glad you are a part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Both myself and my co-host here, Pat, we are both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself, and we broadcast on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And if you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you know that this is designed to take some of the complex stuff that's out there and boil it down into some practical advice, take your calls, answer questions, that things that are happening in your life, and hopefully have a little more fun with it than a boring financial program.
In real life situations, that's why we really, really enjoy taking the phone calls, because many people can relate to your situation. You'd be surprised. Like, what happens when I inherit some money, or my mother or father left me an IRA, or should I pay my mortgage off? Probably the biggest question we get is, should I pay my mortgage off, or what should my debt look like in retirement?
Or is my 401k allocated properly?
Get that a lot.
Yeah. Actually, not enough. The market's been the slow march forward, very little volatility, Trump bump, whatever you want to call it.
You know why it's not enough, Scott?
Because people don't see the risk in it.
I think people see the risk. They don't know how to get to the answer. Because my relatives,
let's don't go to that gene pool.
Okay, well, no. I'm not talking about the shallow end of the relative gene pool. My nieces, nephews, sister-in-law, brother-in-law will email me theirs. And I thought, if that was available to everyone, with someone that they trusted.
A family member they really trusted.
Or anyone that they really trusted, and they weren't worried about some sort of bias or what's in it, or
getting sold something.
People would do it.
Well, I tell you, that's what this program can certainly be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
So if you want to be part of the program, you got a question on anything financial, the things that we were just chatting about. Our number to be part of the program, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. Further, if you are, let's say, on just your iPhone, on our website, you can click right through on the number, and it will bring you right to the studio as well. So,
really?
It's our phone number.
Oh, where to join the show?
Yes,
to talk to Scott and Pat.
Yes, on the weekends.
Yes.
Our normal number is used in the studio. Right, Pat?
Yeah.
888-2-HANSON.
Yes.
My point is.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yes.
Like, if you just click on that now, you'll get to talk to us.
I'm not saying you should be driving down the car and open the browser and Google Hanson McLean and get the website.
Oh, you could
click
just,
that. That's a possibility, but that would be dangerous driving.
Or just 1-800-2-888. I'm sorry, 888-2-HANSON. All right, I'm on. I'm paying attention now.
Anyway.
All right, let's go to the calls.
Yeah, so again, 888-2-HANSON. We're going to start off today right in Colorado with Ann. Ann, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi there, Pat and Scott.
Hi, Ann.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Well, I have kind of a unique thing, so you may just want to hit the pause button and go right ahead with someone else. When I'm looking at basis on a property, mm-hmm. am I correct in assuming that is the price you paid or traded or assuming or whatever to that property.
Wow. So
not necessarily.
So you said it's an unusual question. It isn't all that unusual. Lots of questions about basis, not only in real property, but in stocks and bonds, and especially in mutual funds.
Mutual funds, particularly that had reinvested dividends.
And particularly, or companies, so we're figuring stocks. So tell us a little bit about the property itself.
If this isn't great weekend radio, I don't know what is.
If you're tuning out now, you're going to miss the best part where we talk about the complexity of the tax code. Is this a rental property or is this your primary resident?
Well, let me, if I can take a minute to kind of explain it. First of all, I'm a 78-year-old widow, and I'm debt-free, and I have a stable income of $6,000 a month. Of that income, I spend approximately $4,000, maybe a little more if I'm really getting extravagant.
Okay.
My question relates to a quick claim deed that my son and I performed on our primary, both of us primary residence without liens on either, and both of us had lived in the homes for over the 2-year period required by tax benefits.
But you didn't sell it.
Well, we traded it to each other. I traded mine to him and him to me.
Why?
Because I lost my husband, and there was emotional ties as well as the home was way too big.
All right, so not, you switched homes.
Them.
So
we switched homes.
Oh, cool.
Put it that way. Now, the value of mine was greater than the value of his, but probably around $70,000 difference. But when we did the quit claim, we did what in Colorado they call real property disclosure. And on that, we place values of the properties identically. Now, his concern, not mine, but his concern is that somewhere down the line, he may have a goofed up tax basis.
Yeah, well,
or...
here's my concern, right? So there's what's known as arm's length transactions.
But they're living in these homes, so, Scott?
Yes.
I understand, but what's the cost basis?
What are the values of the homes?
Oh, mine was like 500. His was like 4.25 to 450, something like that. Not huge values.
So they essentially sold them to each other.
Yes.
But I think my concern is that there's an arm's length transaction issue where it's not necessarily, it's not going to be treated as a typical sale.
How long ago did this happen?
This year.
And why did you not sell them to each other?
Well, we just, being cheapskates, wanted to avoid a lot of the...
Yeah.
He had lived in his house 17 years.
Uh-huh.
So we knew it had no liens.
Here's our recommendation.
Here's
our recommendation. I would go talk to a good tax preparer, a good CPA, someone who can understand this stuff, most CPAs. A CPA that specializes in tax. And
you didn't even have to sell them to each other, Scott. You could have just traded them without the quit claim. But you did a quit claim deed on it. Is there any documentation that you traded these properties for each other so that there was an exchange of value?
I know, but being family members, my concern is that there's an arm's length transaction issue. Just like my business partner here, Pat.
Right on the quick claim that this is generally done between family members.
I understand.
Okay,
I understand.
So Scott, so
here's,
I'm going to go with Scott's
here's what I would do, Ann. If I were in your situation, I would go with my son, visit with a CPA, run for an hour, run it by him, pay the hourly fee for being there, document exactly what needs to be done here, take those documents and file them away. It's well worth your time because, and I agree with your saying, what you don't want to do is 5 years down the road or 10 years down the road, you sell it. Now you're trying to figure out, what is the gain here?
Yeah.
How do I calculate this?
And if
if it was an exchange or you actually traded them, your basis would be the date of death, the value of the company.
Unless they were both gifts.
No.
Yeah, so you don't want them to be gifts.
Yeah, that's right.
You got to go. Listen, you're not. I don't believe that there is a financial talk show radio host around that could answer this question.
Well, we did answer the question.
We did. We answered your question, which is you're not going to get an answer from us. Because I would consider a CPA, or I might bring it right to a real estate attorney in the state of Colorado.
Yeah, and you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, I would bring that most certainly to a qualified CPA, not a tax preparer, but a CPA
that works with individuals.
And yes,
yeah. All right, Ann.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, it'll be worth it. It'll be worth your time and money. Really,
you'd be crazy if you didn't do this. You might be crazy already. I don't know you.
I am crazy. I am.
She sounds quite youthful, actually.
I think I'm nuts. Yeah.
You're 78 years old. You sound great.
Oh, well, I am great.
There we go. All right,
you know, hey.
Perfect.
What's wrong with being 78?
No, nothing.
That makes you even greater.
No, it's the new 68.
That makes her feel good. She doesn't look a day beyond 77 either. I appreciate the call. Glad you called that, Ann. So there's these arm's length transaction laws.
Yeah, I would have actually consulted
before. Of course, you would have.
Yes, before.
And I've done some real estate transactions with family members on a couple different times, and I've talked to both attorneys and CPAs and documented everything prior to.
Which is giving you an audit trail.
Yeah. And you particularly want to document things anytime you do any sort of business transaction with a family member, because as time goes on, everyone forgets what was agreed upon.
It has a tendency to happen.
It's nice to have a document to go back. But on things like this, arm's length transaction, as an example, let's say you owned a piece of property and you're taxed in California, where your tax, let's say you bought a piece of property and it declined in value, and you thought, you know, I'd love to lock in this lower value for my tax base. And so you say, you know, I'm going to take my friend and say, hey, I'll tell you what, can you buy this from me? But we'll agree that you'll sell it back to me in, you know, a short period of time.
And
later.
The question is that an arm's length?
No, it's not.
Yes.
It wouldn't be an arm's length.
No, it would not.
It wouldn't work.
It wouldn't. It
might work, but you might go to jail.
Yeah. If there was no economic
value. Not that Ann's going, I didn't imply that. What's Ann's doing?
If there was no economic value in the transaction, it was only for tax purposes, the IRS has a tendency to look down
on
that.
That's right. They do. Anyway, 1-888-2-HANSON to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON. We're talking with Paul. Paul, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Hi, Paul.
I'm doing a little bit of advanced planning for retirement. And, well, I'm 70 and my wife's 69. I'm looking at retiring next year. She worked for a while. She's retired now.
Okay. Are either one of you actually receiving Social Security benefits at this time?
We both are.
Okay. And when did you start those?
At full retirement age, 66.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Okay. In my current job that I'm going to retire from, I make about $150,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I'm also receiving about $160,000 in retirement from the military, from Social Security, from a annuity that I inherited, and some disability from the VA. So
your total income right now is approximately $310,000.
Correct.
Okay.
And it'll say, you know, about $160,000. The good thing is the $160,000 is indexed. All of it's indexed, but it's all taxable, too.
Yeah.
And except for the VA.
How much do you owe on your mortgage? We're not worried about you being able to retire, by the way. The question is...
Oh, okay.
Depends what his retirement
the question income is. The question is...
If he's spending $400,000 a year now, then we got a problem.
Correct. The question is, you're going to be able to retire. The question that you want answered is, can I continue my exact same lifestyle? And by the way, I just read a study that the average retiree spends 103%, 3% more in the first 2 years of the retirement.
First 2 years. Pent-up
demand. First 2 years. It's pent-up demand, and then it goes back
down. Yeah, and
that's
what we're kind of planning on, because we're going to be traveling and stuff, and I think that's kind of common. Yeah. We're retiring. I'm retiring a little bit older, so you know,
you won't have quite as much. So, how much do you? What's the value of the home, and how much do you owe on it?
The value of the house is about $500K, and we owe about $195K on it.
Okay, and how much do you have in IRAs or 401Ks or?
IRAs about $550,000, and other savings about $200,000.
And the other savings, how are they invested?
Primarily through Vanguard, you know, kind of a, I do my own stuff, but, you know, kind of combination of things. Some actually tax-free municipal stuff right now.
And you said you owe, that's approximately $200,000?
Yeah, about $200,000.
What do you think you should do?
And the interest rate on your home is what? You said
2%? 2.75.
Okay, so what do you think you should do? That's a great question, Scott.
Well, I can't pay it off while I'm working. Because, you know, if I pull a lot of money out of, say, an IRA, it'd create a big taxable event. So if I'm going to pay it off, I have to do it right after I stop working full time, probably, you know, like early in 2018.
So let me ask you this. If your home was paid off today, would you go out and take a $195,000 loan against it so you can go and invest in a variety of mutual funds, no-load funds, some muni bonds?
Probably not.
Okay. Then let's take it to the next conclusion. What's wrong with actually liquidating that brokerage account with the muni bonds investments in there and paying down the mortgage? And then you know that for that portion of your portfolio, you have a guaranteed 2.75% rate of return. Would you be happy with a portion of your portfolio getting a guaranteed 2.75% rate of return?
Well, hope for a little bit higher, but
well, we're not talking about hopes. We all have hopes and dreams, right? Don't we?
So, I mean, you know,
we don't know what's going to happen next year.
The bottom line, you know, I think from a lifestyle standpoint, given the amount of guaranteed income you have coming in, one can make an argument either way. And if your goal is to die with as money much asset as possible, then I'd say don't pay it off. Let's roll the dice. Let's get more aggressive with the funds that you've got in your investments. But, you know, with that, so if that's your goal. On the other hand, if your goal is to have as stress-free financial life as possible, then I'd say, you know, the challenge, you've got this $200,000 sitting in these funds. What happens if they fall in value to $150,000?
So
we know the bank's going to require repayment of that loan regardless.
Yeah. And what we do know is that this retirement income that you're receiving of retirement benefits, $160,000 a year, some of that has been going on for a while, but most of it is a relatively new income stream to you. Is that not true?
Well, actually, most has been going on since I retired from the Air Force 20 years ago, but Social Security is kind of the only new thing.
Okay. So here's what the situation is. You're living large, Paul.
I mean, which is fine.
Which is fine. So I would pay off that mortgage.
That's one less payment.
It's one less payment. And then I would do the required minimum distributions on the IRAs. And then I'd take the $160,000 a year in income that is indexed, and I'd learn to live on all of those combined.
That sounds like a good plan. I got one other related question is, okay, so we have a mortgage on our house, say 200. The house is worth 500. If we sell the house, my understanding is between me and my wife, we don't have to pay on $500,000 of gains, right?
Correct.
But if one of us is gone, that goes down to $250,000.
That's correct.
But you don't think
you get a step up?
You get a full step up in basis in the property, though.
Yeah, you'll get a step up in basis.
So it moves the value of the property up to whatever the date was of the first death. So then there's available $250,000 above that.
So you don't think that enters into
no, I wouldn't spend a minute.
Not only that, you've got it's three of the last 5 years. So let's assume one of you were widowed, you've got the survivor would have 3 years to make that decision. But we have a step up in basis.
Yeah, I wouldn't spend any time thinking about that. What I would be thinking about is, okay, I've got this $160,000 a year in income. I've got my required minimum distribution out of my IRA, which will be, he's got a $550,000 IRA, so about, what?
$18,000
$18,000, $20,000 a year.
Yeah, I've got to take I've got to take the first one, I think, by the end of this year, because I turned 70 and a half this year.
Mm-hmm. You actually have until...
I could April of 18, I guess I could delay
April 1st. And if, in fact, if, and we very, very rarely recommend that, but if in fact, you're going to be retiring the end of this year and you will not be working next year, we would strongly encourage you to defer that first required minimum distribution until the first quarter of 18.
And then take that one in the first quarter of 18 and then take another one towards the end of the...
Yes,
correct.
Exactly.
So you're going to take two next year. So,
because right now you're getting hit, you know, where you're getting slammed as well as in at this income level, you're losing your personal exemptions. You're losing your itemized deductions, right? You've got some reduction on it anyway for your taxes.
Right.
You're paying more in Medicare Part B than your neighbors.
Yeah, I'm paying a lot.
And you're a regular fat cat.
How much are you paying in Medicare B on a monthly basis?
I think it's about $260 each.
Yeah, $260 each.
So you're truly, Paul, you're a regular fat cat. So
whatever that means.
Paul knows what it means.
If I delay it till next year on the
you're gonna save some money on taxes. So what is your mortgage payment?
It's about $2,300. We've been paying quite a bit more than that on
There you go. You're fine. Pay the house off, call it a day.
I don't know how your mutual funds are allocated in your 200,000 savings. You said some are in tax exempt bonds. Do you have any in stock funds?
Not really.
Okay.
I actually most are in mutual deferred bonds simply because I don't want to pay more taxes.
Yeah. So what can happen, but I tell you, we have a rising interest rate environment, and any return, if assuming rates rise, nobody knows what the future is going to be, but if rates go up, you can certainly have a loss there. If I were in your situation, I wouldn't wait till the end of the year.
I'd do it tomorrow.
There's very minimal tax
implications. Yeah, there's no benefit in waiting. I would just pay the house off as quickly as I could. I would revisit the allocation in the 401k, in the IRA. And if I wasn't spending those required minimum distributions, I'd just put them in the bank. And,
right. And
I assume that your trust is up to date.
We can live on the 160 and then... pulling the required out, that just gives us some more money for travel.
That's correct. And remember, you're paying extra on that mortgage. So I would do that. I'd make
and
sure my
that $2,300 a month at the marginal tax rate you're in, including your paying into Social Security taxes and everything else, you're really making about $4,000 a month. It's costing you, but that $2,300 is actually costing you about $4,000 a month of your wages.
Just because when you're taking those
taxes. Yeah, you figure out all the taxes.
So I would make sure my trust was up to date, and then I'd start planning the big vacations.
Okay.
Of course, they're not vacations when you're
retired. Yeah, they are not vacations. Well, actually, isn't it funny, Scott? You can tell when someone really recognizes or when they're retired is when they quit referring to their vacations.
Travel.
They call it trips or travel.
Not vacations.
Not vacations.
Oh, okay.
So start planning your trips.
Probably wish you well.
Yeah. Okay, I really appreciate your advice.
Yeah, our pleasure.
You know how it goes.
Yeah, great. Good for you. And I tell you, some of the listeners are like, wow, I wish I was in his position.
Yeah, he put himself in that position.
sometimes curveballs always happen.
It's
like when someone says, I can't save because my car broke down.
I get it.
I understand the pain.
You've been there.
Of course.
You were living in an acquaintance's bedroom. When you first started in the business, when I met you.
I'm talking to people about financial independence. I was literally rented a bedroom.
The guy was a firefighter, young guy, great guy.
When I moved to town, full disclosure here. There were months, Pat, I did not have the money to pay the $300 rent, and I took a cash advance on my credit card to make the rent happen.
And
at the same time, I was out there as a financial advisor.
Well, you were giving good advice.
I was
just
young,
weren't able to
right
live it yet.
So, I obviously took some risks to build this business. But, I know what that's like. But
So when we give this advice, you're thinking, these guys, what do they know? I mean, they've got money. Listen, I wasn't born on third base and thought I hit a triple.
You were born in America.
I was born in, you know what, Scott?
And you got some intellect and some charisma.
So my family.
So you kind of were born third.
I was in Mozambique.
Actually, almost a home base.
I was in Mozambique, and I know you've been there a number of times. And I was with my children, and I said kind of a cultural visit with them. And I said, amazing, isn't it?
And we complain about a dinner one night. My youngest son, the 16-year-old, said, I don't know why we should complain about anything.
Yeah. And particularly when you go and you see some of the real slums.
And then he said, do you know how long it's taking to get this food? I didn't. I'm joking.
This cornmeal is cold.
There's not enough ice in this drink. No. No.
Anyway.
You were being born in America. You're certainly rounding second, aren't you?
I was in Mozambique in 2002, the summer of 2002. That was in the first major downturn. The stock market had declined almost. It went 45%. But anyway, it was right in the midst of that. It was very helpful for me because it was just a reminder of how many, so many people in the world live. So that way when it's back and people are complaining that their portfolio was down some or...
And it was, and you had...
Everything's
relative, isn't it?
Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. If you want to join us, 1-888-2-HANSON's the number, 1-888-2-HANSON. You're listening to Hanson McClain's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McClain.
Again, to join the program, we'd love to take your call, 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766.
Or alternatively, you could go to our website as well.
That's right.
HansonMcClain.com.
We had just finished a round. We do periodic workshops. We do workshops periodically. That makes maybe a little more sense.
Yes.
On retirement issues. And we just did one on Social Security.
Which we, and we apologize if you weren't able to get into them. But out of the, I think we did 9 of them in.
Throughout Northern California and Denver.
But we had to close, I think, half of them because they were oversubscribed.
We had. Over 1,500 individuals registered for those workshops. Actually, I'm looking at the numbers, 1,568 to be exact. And then we had to close things down because it got too...
So our apologies, and we will be offering these workshops in the future.
Yes, but what we'd encourage you, if you thought, maybe I should have been there, we'll have some in the future. But we've got a webinar on our website at HansonMcClain.com that goes through some of the nuances of Social Security. It's important for you just to have some basic understanding. If you look at Social Security, it's one of the, when you file for that, whether you do it at 62 or 70 or somewhere in between, it'll have an impact for you for the rest of your life.
In fact, the gentleman that just called, Paul.
Yeah.
And he took his Social Security full retirement age at age 66. He's 70 now. I don't think that would have been my recommendation.
It might have with this amount of pension income he had coming in.
I don't know.
Anyway, but that's what...
That's the question. And we would have calculated that and had the discussion.
Yeah. I mean, oftentimes we look and say, all right, here's some examples. If you take it now, if you wait, here's what it means. Here's what it means, not just in cash flow today. Here's what your portfolio might look like 15 years now because
you took it earlier. What's your health like? How old were your parents when they passed away? How did they die? Because the benefit of Social Security, if you knew the day you were going to die, you would absolutely be able to pick the right.
Yes.
Yeah, but that'd be a terrible life if that were to happen. So.
If you knew when you're going to die?
Yeah. So what we. Yes. We
maybe.
We,
unless she was 102. Unless you were 101. Then you.
then you're like. So we answer the questions. When should you apply? What happens if I keep working? How much will I lose if I earn more? This is all on our website under the HansonMcClain.com. Videos.
And also a little side note, quick book. For when people sit down with our advisors to go through the 7 personal decision point, our retirement planning process as they're preparing for retirement, this is the sort of analysis that we do with clients when they at time of when do we figure out taking Social Security. So oftentimes, Pat, we'll meet with somebody like maybe they're in the mid-50s, late-50s, like, all right, I really got to get retirement figured out. We help them organize their life, figure out what's the right allocation, how much they should be saving.
Whether they should pay down debt.
Are they saving too much? Are they saving enough? Very few people are saving too much, by the way. Are they saving enough? And then help them transition into retirement when that's appropriate. But then part of this also is this whole Social Security analysis that we do our clients through. So as a quick plug, if you'd like to meet with one of our advisors, if you've yet taken advantage, we do offer a free consultation for the first meeting. And
where we
will add some value that first time. But simply contact our office and throughout the Northern California area. We have several meeting locations in the Bay Area and in Denver as well and in the Sacramento region. So we'd love to talk with you if you found yourself with some money saved for retirement and yet wondering if you are on the right track or not. Or
even if you're at retirement and you're deciding whether you should take Social Security or not.
I talked to someone the other night. Actually, I did one of these works that I presented at one of these workshops. And I was talking to someone. She had been retired for about 3 years and was trying to figure out
whether they should start Social Security or not.
Yeah.
And you can actually calculate it.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can calculate it. We can calculate
We can calculate it. We'd love to help you out there. So anyway, 1-888-2-HANSEN to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. And let's go to Georgia and talk with Steve. Steve, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hi, Steve.
Thanks for taking my call. The question I had was revolving around Roth IRA and I believe it's 529 education savings plan.
Uh-huh.
I currently have two Roth IRAs, one for myself, one for my wife. And we've been using that in our minds as a vehicle to one day pull from for our children's education.
Steve, how old are you?
Go ahead.
How old are you?
I am 43 and so is my wife.
And how old are your children?
9 and 7.
Okay.
But we heard recently, and that's why I'm kind of looking into this now, that you cannot pull from your Roth IRA for your children's education. You can only pull from it for your own education, the account holder's education. And then I went online looking into this, and I'm getting different answers from different people. So I'm trying to figure out, do I need to look into a 529, or can I actually use these Roth IRAs and continue on that path?
Well, why did you choose the Roth IRA in the first place over the 529 plan?
Well, we started the Roth IRAs before we had the children.
Okay.
That wasn't a consideration at first for the children. And then when we had our financial planner look at everything we were doing, we just went ahead and continued with that along with some other investments in our portfolio. And it seems from what we heard that the 529, you put money in that, it's limited. You can only take it out for education, but we were told that for the Roth IRA, you could withdraw for multiple purposes.
Here's how the rules work for Roth IRAs, okay? So as long as a Roth has been established for at least 5 years.
It's from the date of opening, not deposit.
The date of opening.
Not deposit.
So yours have been there.
Okay.
You can take out your contributions tax-free and use it for anything you want. So
regardless of age?
Yes. Use it for anything you want. So if you end up putting $50,000 into a Roth over the years and it's now worth, let's say, $90,000, you can pull out 50 grand and do whatever you want. Go to the kids' education, use it for a trip to Vegas to see if you can double it. You can do whatever you want with it, right? Now, when we're talking about the earnings, if you just take the earnings out for whatever you want, you're going to have to pay taxes and a 10% federal penalty.
So now you're partially right then.
If the money is used for education, either for yourself or a direct member of your family, linear member of your family, it is is free from that 10% income tax, but is still subject to federal and state taxation.
So your basis could come out without any penalty or tax ramifications, but the earnings you would defer until age 59 and a half, and you could pull them out at that point in time.
So if that's the case, why would somebody choose a 529 instead when that's limited to just withdrawing it for education?
What if you can afford to save more?
Yeah. And the 529 plans have some other benefits when you take the money out over age 60 or 65.
Oh, I see. There's no limit to what you can contribute to the 529 is what you're saying.
That's correct. There's no
limit. Well, there is a limit. There is a limit.
But it's higher than the Roth.
Well, you can trigger gift tax and there's no limit.
Yeah, technically.
For intensive purposes.
There's a limit, but it's so high. I actually have never seen anyone get close to it.
So I've got two kids in college now, and I just, a couple weeks ago, took money out of the 529 to use for their college. And frankly, I had quite a bit of gain in those plans. I put more money in the middle of the financial crisis when things were down, and it had a lot of gain. And if the majority of the plan was gain, and okay. if I were subject to income taxes, I would probably not have taken it out. I would have said, what other sources can I look at for a college fund to pay for the expenses? So unfortunately, my son went to an expensive school.
So fortunately, you've saved the money to make it good.
I'm glad he's in the school he's in.
Yes. Steve, tell us about the rest of your world. So I assume you're making the maximum contributions to your 401k or 403b or retirement plan, correct?
Somewhat correct, yes. We're putting the max in that is matched by my wife has a 401k, 403. They're actually converting it from a 403b to a 401k here.
Okay.
And she maxes it out to what they match.
And how about you?
With me, I have with my employer, no, I do not. We chose not to use ours because there's no matching. I'm in the public education system, and the choices that we had to choose from were not that great. The fees were high, and so we ended up going with an outside service with Vanguard.
Okay. When you say outside with Vanguard, you mean with the Roth IRAs? Do you have
Roth
money
IRAs,
that you're saving outside of your retirement plans?
Outside of those Roths, yes. With Vanguard, we have a brokerage account.
And how much money is in that brokerage account?
Close to $200,000.
And what's your family income?
Combined between my wife and I, probably about $110,000.
Okay, so there's two things I want you to do. One, you said you went to your financial advisor and this is what they told you to do.
I don't know why you're not using your 401k.
You need to fire the financial advisor that told you that.
Okay.
Just flat out.
Why?
Well, because you're better off putting money into the 401k. You're putting money after tax dollars into this account that you're not going to spend.
That's your opinion, obviously, but at $110,000.
It's an informed opinion.
I understand.
What we tried to do was do a balance of after tax and before tax. We max out both Roth IRAs, and we also have another IRA that rolled over from my wife's previous job.
I get that, but you're continuing to save money in this brokerage account, are you not?
It's the last account we put everything into.
It's not the order that either one of us would do, and not the order that 95% of financial advisors would recommend. And then I really wonder, we would strongly encourage using the 529 plan.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because odds are at least one of your kids is going to end up in some sort of education.
What was the account? Did you inherit any money of the money in the brokerage account? Was any of that inherited money?
No.
Okay. And what was the account balance when the first child was born in that brokerage account ballpark?
Oh, boy.
Lower than it is today?
Oh, yeah.
So you've continued to make contributions into that brokerage account, save money into that on a consistent basis.
Not about a consistent basis, but there's been contributions and it has gone up, yes.
I would put money – if I were me, I would quit saving on those after-tax accounts. I would put money in my 401k and I'd put money in a 529. I'd still like you doing the Roth, but I just think the tax break you're in now, it'd be hard –
yeah.
All right.
And that's our opinion. But that's and it's the right one. If we pulled
95,
if I pulled all the competent financial advisors.
Let's talk about certified financial planners.
That I trust, that would be the recommendation.
That don't sell product. Let's take those that don't sell product.
That I trust.
They sell product, they're going to sell, you need a universal life insurance or something.
Yeah, but you don't want one of those.
I mean, Steve, you're doing great, frankly.
No one's beating you up.
You got money saved, you're working, I mean, you're doing all the right
Steve,
things.
Steve, what do you do for a living?
I'm a teacher. Oh. I'm a high school teacher, basketball coach.
And what do you teach? What subject?
English.
You're good. You're doing a great job. You really are. You're doing a great job. We're just around the edges.
Because if you look at the way the tax rates work, all of us have some income that's not taxed at all. Then we have a little bit taxed at 10%. Then there's a big bracket at 15%. From there, it jumps from 15% to 25%. So right now, your last dollars are taxed at 25%. So the money you're sitting there saving in your after-tax mutual funds, you're taking a dollar, giving the government 25 cents, and putting 75 cents in savings. We're thinking, you know, you'd be better off
just giving the government any part of that and getting the whole dollar in there and not worrying about the match.
Yeah, at least for some
portion. I make the contribution. Most of the advisors I know make contributions past the match.
Oh, I do too.
Okay.
No question about it.
Yeah.
Do you think, I maximize
it. Do the difference in fees play a role in this at all?
Yeah, but you have a 403B or 401K available to you.
I have a 403B.
You could do it at a Vanguard. I mean, there's a slot on your payroll for Vanguard.
Odds are.
No, through the county I work with, they give us a list of institutions that they contract with.
Is TIAA CREF on that institution list?
You'll find a low-cost one.
No, it was not.
And Vanguard or TIAA CREF isn't on that institution list? Do me a
no.
You're going to have a low-cost option on that list. If they don't give you a low-cost option on that list, you need to go back and talk to them.
They're subject to some...
Oh, no. I did recommend that they use Vanguard and some other ones.
They're going to be sued eventually.
They're not smart.
No, they're not.
Really. You need low-cost options. Do they have these big old fat annuities absolutely. That
but
they
But you know
offer?
What else you could do? If you did one that's even if it was more expensive, that was a 403B and do a... Couldn't they do a direct transfer to another 403B while still employed?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know the rules on that. I can't speak to that. There's some rules around
it.
There's rules around that. That's a whole different thing. If they don't offer a low-cost option...
Have your wife put more into hers.
Yeah, that can, you can
max
do that
out
too.
That
max that out first and then do yours.
18 grand.
After.
That I like.
And you know the benefit of the 403B is you could borrow up to $50,000 out of it with tax implications. That's a way to pay for the kid's education and then refunnel it back in.
Well, it's funny. The thing that sparked this whole idea was we have, you know, probably about 8 to 12 months worth of savings just in the general savings account in our bank, and we got to wondering, you know, are we is that a bad idea? Should we move it into a 529 or should we try to contribute to the Roth?
So we I like both.
Into, you know,
and ideally,
yeah, how can we access it?
Ideally, the Roth gets used for your retirement because they're wonderful to have Roth IRAs, and we're big fans of them. Trust us, but the 529 plans they work wonders.
They do.
You don't have to fund all their education.
Yeah, you can fund part of it. And you can change the beneficiaries at any time. You name the first child, you know, doesn't use it all up. You name the second child doesn't use it all up. You name yourself.
Yep.
Okay. Is the beneficiary.
What do they do if the money isn't used for education purposes?
The gain is taxable, and it's subject to a 10% penalty.
But there's a certain age limit. Is there
none? That's you're thinking of health savings.
Oh, plans. I am thinking of health savings. Thank you, Scott.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Steve.
But you can name your grandchild, right?
Okay.
You can name your grandchild. You don't use it. You name yourself for a little while, and you're like, I'm not going to use this. And then you name your grandchild. And then you can name your great-grandchild. It depends on how long you live. You can multiple generations.
Excellent.
All right, Steve.
Appreciate
glad you called. Yeah, glad you called. And that's a really kind of interesting order of savings.
Being a high school teacher, English would be hard.
I hated English in high school.
Did you?
I still struggle with it.
You're a great writer.
But, you know, it's all subjective. Someone else made up these rules and trying to put them on me.
Okay.
Why do I have to spell it that way?
Fight
That's what
back.
Goes through my mind.
Fight
Mathematics,
back.
Math is math. You can't argue with math. It is.
Yes, that's correct.
Language, come on.
You know, that's funny.
And I don't like anyone telling me what to do.
I was doing a educational workshop, I remember, about 2 years ago, and this guy raises his hand in the back, and he said...
Yeah, Hanson McClain's been doing it for years.
Yeah. I was doing it years ago. And he said, this and this and this, and I said, well, your math is wrong. He actually went through this calculation. I said, your math is wrong. And he said, tell me why my math is wrong. And I said, well, this is how the calculation's done. He said, but why is that wrong? I said, I don't know why it's wrong. Is it wrong?
2 + 2 = 4. It's not 3.5.
Yeah.
I can't.
And he said, well, why do I get this answer? I said, I don't know. Can't argue with you about why you can't do math.
Why is there gravity? It just is. You can pretend there's not there.
Yeah.
Maybe. Anyway.
But high school teacher, you got to give it to him.
Hans McLean, we are going to transition here to our portion of the program that we have periodically on Real Advice. And this is a time in our show when we've got one of our advisors, Hans McLean's advisors, on to talk about a real-life experience that we've encountered with an individual or a couple. And we talk about how what we did to perhaps help that person. And one thing to keep in mind, their situation is unique. You're not going to have the same kind of situation. Why theirs might have been good or bad, yours could be different. So anyway, this week we've got on Tad Daughtry. And Tad has been with Hans McLean for, I don't know what,
how long?
A decade? Something like that?
Yeah. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me
yeah,
on.
Yeah. You've been sure. a certified fund specialist.
How long have you been at Hans McLean?
12 years.
12 years.
12 years. Works at our Sacramento office.
And so. You're a direct descendant of the well-known signee of the Declaration of Independence, John Hart.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that's John Hart signed the Declaration of Independence.
Me neither. He's way down the list.
He was way down the list.
Nobody really cared about him. But that was one of Tad's great grandfathers. Yeah.
That's
so
right.
Tell us about a situation that you encountered.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me on. So I recently met with a couple who've been married for 40 years. They're in their he's in his late 70s and she's in her early 60s. Both are still working and they enjoy work.
He's in late 70s, still working?
Late 70s, still working. That's right. And she's early 60s. And they, like most married couples, certain roles were kind of assumed within the relationship. It's not uncommon to see that with our clients or future clients that come through the door, that one person kind of takes the driver's seat with finances. And in this household, it was sort of a divide and conquer strategy. So one assumed the day-to-day budget, bill paying. The other one assumed the investment and future needs role. And he is a do-it-yourselfer type and took that future needs role. He recently has had some health issues, and due to this change in life, he has a higher probability of a debilitating stroke. So they came in to sit down, kind of wrap their arms around what they have in terms of investments, and find a partner to assist his wife.
Should something
he does
happen.
Have that
or
stroke.
When something happens.
Exactly. That's right.
Yeah, age difference here.
You got it. So over the last
now, this is quite years, common, actually, that people come in at this something like this.
Yes. Not unusual at all. If there's a health issue, that they'll seek outside advice, even the ones that have been most comfortable managing the portfolios.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that was this couple. So over the last several years, he attended events and seminars and dinners and tried to soak in as much information as he could about investments and planning through that time. And he, in reviewing his case, he's been sold many, many, many non-liquid investment vehicles and insurance-based products. And if you've listened to this show more than once, you should know some of the risks and dangers involved with these type of products.
So you said he was a do-it-yourselfer, but really it sounds like he went to lots of different
At one point in time, he was doing it himself, and then he thought he needed advice, so he started searching around and ended up at these dinner workshops where they give you a big steak and potatoes and a side of
annuity
green beans, and he ended up with some high commissioned, big charge annuities.
Yeah, so tell us this.
And non-traded REITs, is that what else he bought?
That's right. So he had insurance-based products and non-traded real estate investment trusts, and they have several hundred thousand dollars spread across 38 separate accounts. 32 of them are non-liquid or have low liquidity. 28 of them are not publicly traded real estate
investments. And how much in total dollars were these accounts?
Just a little north of $300,000.
That is just a tremendous amount of work that he opened up these little accounts for $10,000 and $12,000 and $20,000.
28. What percentage of the portfolio was in non-traded real estate investment trusts?
About 80%, and another 10 is in annuity-based products.
How many different people sold him these products? Was there 2, 10, 27?
When we sat down and discussed some of the basics and overview of these things, through that discovery, there seemed to be about 7 to 8 individual people that sold these things. Of course, they're no longer in the industry.
All right. So if you're listening to this show...
So there's not much. How could you help these people?
First thing you get this would be a borderline elder abuse.
Yes,
and most certainly malpractice. What did you do? So listen to this. Stay away from annuities. Everyone out there, stay away from annuities. Are there good annuities out? Are there good annuities out? There's maybe a couple. But the problem is the average consumer can't tell the difference between good and bad.
And one of the things that reason at Hanson McLean why we establish the portfolio as we do, independent custodians, we use publicly traded, no load mutual funds and exchange traded funds, low cost funds that are liquid. Clients can go online any day. They can look and see exactly the value they want out. They could be out today.
Right now.
They can liquidate, move on, something changed in their life, whatever. They can turn things to cash immediately. They know the price. They can turn it to cash. That's part of one of our core tenets we think is important.
This client doesn't have the ability to do that. So, Tad, with that in mind, not ability to actually get out of these investments, what do you do to help? I don't even know where I'd be. I'd be at it.
Yeah, that's a great question, Pat. So part of the challenge was some education on what the products were, how they work, some basic overview, 30,000-foot flyby. And once they had that understanding, they really understand how their hands were tied. Now, in this case, this guy didn't plan on having a major health issue. So his strategy, he understood the lack of liquidity, but had the idea that a portion of these would sort of mature, if you will, over several periods of years, allowing that liquidity to sort of fold in as income needed in the future. Well, in his case, life took a quick left-hand turn, and those health issues have now a need for that.
And
liquidity.
So did he have access to money in his annuities?
Yes. So the IRS allows 10% that you can pull from that without any penalties. But the bigger challenge that he has is the fact that he's over the age of 70 and a half. The IRS requires the minimum distribution to happen.
Some of these are in.
This is just a mess.
The majority of this estate and assets are in qualified accounts and IRAs. And over the last few years, the dividends and interest have been covering the required minimum.
Yeah, but they don't anymore.
Tad, we're running out of time.
Tad, what percentage of their overall net worth was this $300,000?
About 75%.
Oh, Tad, do what you can to help. But appreciate you being on the show.
I tell you, here's part of our passion for what we do. We see this sort of thing happen.
You tell me you don't come to work in the morning and see this and think that you need to do a better job of getting this gentleman into your office.
We are a fiduciary investment advisory firm, fee-based advisory firm. We think we're really good, right? There are other good fee-based fiduciary advisory firms.
There's many of them.
If you don't like us, go talk to somebody else. But don't talk to someone who's going to sell you a non-traded REIT, for crying out loud.
Or an indexed annuity of any sort. Gracious.
Anyway, we're out of time. You can see our passion on this. So anyway, unfortunately, we're out of time. We're here every Saturday at this same time. You could also get a podcast of this program. Just go to HansonMcLean.com for your podcast, and we'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.